Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our new studio here in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. And speaking of wellness, today we're going to have some top breaking news locally and nationally, as well as some very important health and wellness reports. Our Destination East County will tell you about some hot events across our region, from concerts to comedy to a country fair. And we'll be going on the road to visit the Fund for Wildlife Animal Rehab Center in Ramona, telling you all about the good works that they are doing up there to help release injured wildlife to the wild. So stay tuned for today's East County Magazine show. Multiple fires broke out along Wildcat Canyon Road in Lakeside, just south of Barona Casino, on Tuesday shortly after noon. The blazes sparked some tense moments for residents in this rural community, where the deadly cedar fire of a decade ago, the worst fire in California history, remains a smoldering memory for many. John Dill told East County Magazine that his wife called in one of the fires at 12:09 p.m. He said, within the 10 minutes it took for a response, the fire went from a small area fire to a very large fire. The brush fires briefly forced shutdown of Wildcat Canyon Road and Willows Road, prompting a full-scale attack by CAL FIRE, Barona Fire, and the U.S. Forest Service. The firefighters prevented flames from burning any homes, fortunately, with some help from homeowners manning garden hoses, 10 News reports. The Wildcat Fire, as it's called, was 100% contained at 25 acres by evening, Captain Kendall Bordeser with CAL FIRE told us. The cause of the fires remains under investigation. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The County Water Authority voted Thursday to make water use restrictions mandatory in our region. The decision comes amid extended drought and new emergency water conservation requirements approved last week by the California Water Resources Control Board. For specific details on limits in your community, check with your local water agency. The requirements in San Diego County include watering only on certain days and times, eliminating runoff from irrigation systems, repairing leaks within 72 hours, turning off water features unless they use recycled water, using hoses with shutoff valves for washing cars, or visit a car wash that recirculates water. In addition, restaurants should serve water to guests only on request. Hotels should offer guests the options of not laundering towels and linens daily, and construction sites should use recycled or non-drinking water when possible. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report. Firefighters from La Mesa's Station No. 12 called police on Monday evening to report finding a man in their secure parking area who was burglarizing the firefighters' personal vehicles. As La Mesa police officers responded, the suspect ran away and hid in the garage of a nearby home, where he promptly began stealing items from the garage, too. The resident called police as the suspect fled. Officers set up a perimeter and called for air support. San Diego Police Department's Able helicopter responded, broadcasting announcements of the suspect's description across the neighborhood. A neighbor heard the announcements and called La Mesa Police Department to report witnessing the suspect run into a backyard. Officers entered the backyard and found the suspect hiding under a vehicle. They arrested 29-year-old Lou Brent Edwards of Bonita, who is charged with vehicular and residential burglary. All of the firefighters' stolen items were recovered.
Every minute that a victim of sudden cardiac arrest awaits CPR, their chance of survival drops by up to 10%. After 4 to 6 minutes, brain damage begins to occur. After 10 minutes, it's often too late. Few resuscitation attempts succeed. Now the County of San Diego is teaming up with PulsePoint, a new smartphone application that lets citizens who are trained in CPR know when their help is needed, so they can step in during those crucial moments before a paramedic arrives. It is now available throughout the San Diego region, thanks to the County and City of San Diego, along with a coalition of local agencies countywide. Supervisor Ron Roberts states, Sudden cardiac arrest is a leading cause of death in our country, and just 8% of those who experience it survive. We can do better. This application can help us change these grim statistics, he adds. The San Diego region is one of the largest in the U.S. to launch the application, joining over 500 other localities nationwide already using PulsePoint. When a 911 call for a sudden cardiac arrest comes in, an alert goes to the application at the same time that the first responders are dispatched. Citizens who are signed up for the app and nearby the incident are notified of the location of the victim as well as the closest publicly accessible defibrillators. How effective the app will be in our community will depend on citizen involvement. You're encouraged to get training in CPR and sign up to receive the alerts. The American Red Cross, American Heart Association, and San Diego Project Heartbeat provide trainings throughout the year. You never know when a heart attack will occur. You just may help save someone's life. You can download the application through pulsepoint.org. So for a health report from East County Magazine, this is Leon Thompson.
This is Ed Barena with the health report. Two squirrels trapped at an empty outdoor school on Palomar Mountain have tested positive for plague, prompting San Diego County officials to remind people to take simple steps to protect themselves when camping and hiking. County Environmental Health Director Liz Pozzebon cautions, quote, "When you're enjoying the outdoors, just remember, don't feed or play with squirrels, don't play near squirrel burrows or set up your tents around them, and report dead squirrels to camp rangers." The squirrels were trapped on property at Camp Palomar Outdoor School, which was undergoing summer maintenance and not scheduled to be used by campers until August 25th. Environmental health vector control crews will dust squirrel burrows on the property to kill fleas that can transmit plague from squirrels and rodents to people. Environmental health vector control crews will dust squirrel burrows on the property to kill fleas that can transmit plague from squirrels and rodents to people. They will also conduct additional trapping and monitoring and post signs to warn visitors to protect themselves. It is common to find plague in the region, and the county's vector control program routinely monitors flea populations at campgrounds and takes action to reduce flea numbers when the disease is found. Plague is a bacterial disease that mainly affects wild rodents, but it can be spread to people when fleas feed on the blood of a sick animal and then bite humans, or when people such as hunters handle infected animals. People who contract the plague can become very sick and even die unless they are treated quickly with antibiotics. Symptoms include a sudden onset of fever, chills, and tender swollen lymph nodes. County officials said people who visit or stay in rural mountain areas should look for plague warning signs and always take simple precautions to ensure they don't come into contact with plague-carrying fleas. 1. Avoid contact with ground squirrels, chipmunks, and other wild animals. 2. Do not feed, touch, or handle wild animals. Do not rest, camp, or sleep near animal burrows in the ground. 3. Do not touch sick or dead animals. 4. Protect your pets. Keep them on a leash, use flea control, or best of all, just leave them at home. 5. Contact your doctor immediately if you become sick within a week of visiting an area known to have plague. For more information about plague surveillance, call the County Vector Control Program at 858-694-2888 or visit the Vector Control Program website.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Leon Thompson with East County Magazine's Capitol Report. A new bill in Congress would legalize use of medical marijuana, but only varieties with very low levels of THC, the psychoactive ingredient that makes users high. The bill is called the Charlotte's Web Medical Hemp Act of 2014, named after a Colorado girl, Charlotte Fiji, who found relief from severe seizures by taking cannabis oil and has received widespread national media coverage. The measure would exempt cannabis with less than 0.3% THC from the Controlled Substances Act, the federal law that currently criminalizes all marijuana use. The bill was introduced on July 28th and is currently awaiting action in committee. If passed, the House measure authorized by Representative Scott Perry would help patients with conditions that respond to the low THC medical marijuana. At present, patients with children suffering severe seizures have been forced to move to a different state to get treatment for their children with this condition. The treatment can be life-saving and provide a higher quality of life as well, such as in the case of a young patient who suffered hundreds of epileptic seizures every day before getting the medication. Now she suffers only occasional seizures. She can walk and talk for the first time and play like normal children, CNN has reported. Some medical experts voice caution, noting that long-term side effects of medical marijuana on children are not yet known, and that evidence of its effectiveness are largely anecdotal due to a lack of clinical trials, though a study is planned soon. But the Epilepsy Foundation calls for a balanced decision about compassionate use, particularly for patients who have tried other medications and have no other alternatives. Philip Gatone, president of the Epilepsy Foundation, says that access to a life-saving treatment should not be determined or limited by zip code. He adds, "It is time for Congress to enact this sensible bill that could help save lives." Congressman Perry, a Republican from Pennsylvania, says he remains opposed to recreational use of marijuana. But he says, "As a father, I can't imagine how helpless and crestfallen I'd feel to be essentially out of options without any significant way to help my child. And these families live with these circumstances every single day. Their heartbreaking situations compelled me to act at the federal level to enable their access to a supplement that literally has changed lives."
The owner of a Southern California livestock auction house is facing probation and fines after pleading no contest to animal cruelty charges under California's Downer Law. Charges were brought against Horacio Santorsola after an animal rights group secretly videotaped workers at the auction house beating, throwing, and neglecting injured, lame, or sick animals. Matt Rice with Mercy for Animals says this case graphically illustrates the cruel, inhumane, and often illegal abuses of farm animals.
This conviction should serve as a warning to auctions across the state and the country that animal abuse will not be tolerated.
Santorsola had argued the state law didn't apply to his facility because federal regulations allow injured or sick livestock to be sold and slaughtered if they pass an extra inspection. Rice says when his group, Mercy for Animals, went undercover at Ontario livestock sales, they shot hidden video that showed animals that were too sick or injured to even walk.
Being left to slowly and suffer and die without food, water, veterinary care, being kicked, pushed, and dragged into transport trucks, and sold and slaughtered for human consumption, all in clear violation of California law.
Rice says they've done dozens of undercover investigations like this across the country that document conditions that would shock and horrify most Americans,
leading us to believe that animal abuse runs rampant in the animal agriculture industry and showing that we need stronger laws to protect these animals from needless cruelty and violence.
Santorsola faces 2 years of probation and must pay a $1,000 fine to the Inland Valley Humane Society. Rice calls it a slap on the wrist that proves stronger laws and harsher sentences are needed. This is Lori Abbott, California News Service.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with today's Green Scene Report. Rancho Cuyamaca State Park is proposing to change its wilderness boundaries to decommission some areas of wilderness in the park that suffered major damage during the 2007 wildfires. After receiving public comments, the release of a draft environmental impact report and preliminary general plan has been delayed until August 7th. The park continues to seek public input on its plans. You can find a link to the proposed changes along with how to submit your comments or concerns at eastcountymagazine.org in our Green Living section. Responses to the comments will be provided by the park on August 7th. And then a final opportunity for comment on the General Plan and Environmental Impact Report will occur at the State Park and Recreation Commission meeting on November 14th. At this meeting, the Commission will vote on whether to approve the new General Plan.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Coming up next, it's the Offbeat Report, traveling off the beaten track to find some fascinating stories from the offbeat to the upbeat.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today we are on the road in Ramona at the Fund for Animals Wildlife Center. And my very special guest today is the director,
Allie Crumpacker. Allie, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So this center was started back in 1984, I understand, by Cleveland Amory, the noted author and journalist.
That's right. Back in the 1984 when we were part of the San Clemente Island Goat Rescue.
Goat rescue. So these goats were overrunning the island. They were not native, I understand, and they were going to be killed because they were actually threatening native wildlife. So how many of them did you bring here to Ramona?
According to our records, of over 600 of them came in about a three-year period.
Wow. Now, you've evolved through the years, I understand. Today,
yep.
You don't typically take in non-native species, but you're doing quite a job rescuing native animals and rehabilitating them for release back into the wild.
Yeah, we're not working with goats anymore. We've come a long way since then, and really our niche for the community is helping with native predatory wild animals that are found in distress, whether that's being hit by a car, caught by a dog, they've been poisoned, or they've just come into some trouble where they need help.
Yeah, and I understand you're only one of three wildlife rehab centers in the entire county.
Correct. We're one of the very few.
So it's very important work you're doing. So some of the animals we've seen walking around include bobcats, mountain lion. I understand that you have some coyote pups that you rescued after the May wildfires. Can you give us an update on how the little guys are doing?
Yeah, pup date.
The
coyotes, a little boy and a little girl. Mm-hmm. The first one came in 2 days after the poinsettia fire, and the second one came in 4 days after the fires.
Aww.
And both of them had singed fur and really bad burns on all 4 feet.
Poor babies. Now, how are they doing now? Fast forward, 10 weeks later?
It's been 10 weeks, and they are doing really good. They're both outside now in an enclosure. Mm-hmm. We had to wait a long time with a lot of salve and wraps on their feet to build up that flesh again.
Mm-hmm.
But they're doing really great, and they're on target to be re-released in late September.
Now, what do you do to make sure that they don't become too accustomed to people and to make sure that they're able to feed themselves and take mm-hmm. care of themselves once they're released?
Well, even though they're adorably cute, we don't coochie-coo them. We mm-hmm. we try not to make it a happy time, making all the happy time away from us when they're with themselves, with each other, with their buddies, out in their enclosure. And whenever people come around, we want them to run and hide and then get the food after we leave.
And speaking of running, though, I understand that you do some training with them to make sure that they're able to take care of themselves.
Well, we have to test all of their skills, make sure that they can survive independently upon release. We wouldn't want to be putting coyotes out there that are looking for dog food out of a dog bowl, because that would just cause more conflict, and they might be a repeat patient.
So they go hunting right here inside the
We make sure that they know how to recognize their food and what to do with it once they find it.
Well, very good. What are some of the other types of native animals that you've taken in and helped through the years?
So what we are mostly focusing on here in Ramona is the coyotes, bobcats, skunks, and then birds of prey such as hawks, owls, even turkey vultures.
There you go. Now, I understand that you're very successful at it. What's your percentage rate for releasing these animals back into the wild?
So we have a pretty good percentage of release rate for wildlife communities, and that's 40%.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that sounds like not a great number overall, but wild animals don't want to be found by people.
Mm-hmm.
So when people are able to approach an injured animal, they're usually really, really suffering.
So some of them are just too injured to be able to take care of themselves in the wild.
Yeah.
You also have what you call sanctuary animals. These are non-native animals
mm-hmm.
that people have brought in that maybe were exotic pets, that sort of thing. What are some of the sanctuary animals currently living at the preserve?
So the sanctuary residents have been with us for a very long time. It's a program that we had going a good 2 decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
So these guys have been offered a forever home until they pass on. And that includes our pygmy hippo, who's the oldest pygmy hippo in the country.
Pygmy hippo. And that's he's got quite a pair of tusks on him.
A very strange backyard pet choice
yes.
by someone in the past. We also have 2 mountain lions, 10 bobcats, mm-hmm. and a coyote, all of which were hand-raised by people, so they
wow.
didn't grow up understanding how to be a wild animal.
And we're going to go out in just a little bit here, and we're going to be taking a closer look at some of those animals.
Yep.
Now we're out here looking at some of the sanctuary animals that they have. Allie has told us that in addition to the native wildlife that they rehab for release into the wild, they also have a number of sanctuary animals. Now, right now, we're at an enclosure looking at a mountain lion. Allie, can you tell us the history of this mountain lion? What's his name and where did he come from?
So this is Tonka. He is a very large 210-pound mountain lion that was supposed to be somebody's pet.
Wow. That's, yeah, not your typical house cat.
No, a little big. A little big to be a house cat.
Yeah.
He was actually confiscated by a veterinarian, thankfully, when the woman who purchased him brought him in for his very first, quote-unquote, kitten exam when he was about 29 days old.
29 days old. Now, this was a woman here in California, and she'd purchased him from somebody, what, out of state, where these things are actually legal to own?
Right. So there's a couple states where even today it is still legal to breed and sell these types of animals. And Tonka came from Ohio and was shipped here to California, where it's been illegal to own mountain lions for a very long time.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I can certainly see why. So how old is Tonka?
I'd have to look up his exact birthday, but I believe he's had his 11th birthday this year. Can you hear him?
I think
purring?
Tonka's making some sounds here.
He's purring.
So it sounded like he was purring.
He was purring. Despite being 200 pounds, he is actually considered a small cat, and small cats purr versus large cats that roar.
Mountain lions don't roar.
They can't roar.
Interesting. Okay. So if you're out on the trail and you hear something purring off in the brush, watch out.
Now, you've got about 13 acres, 4,200 square feet here, a beautiful new facility that's just been opened in, the end of last year?
Yep, we just moved in December. We had our official grand opening in February. Mm-hmm. And thanks to a lot of donors and sponsors, we were able to build this magnificent medical facility. We were working out of a 1920s concrete little block thing before.
Wow.
We just installed last week a fabulous x-ray machine. And that's a generous thank you going out to the McGrath family for sponsoring that.
Oh, the same folks that donated to the YMCA out there in mm-hmm. Rancho San Diego. Very generous people. Now, this facility is not open to the public. It's not a place that you can tour or go see the animals because, of course, they want to keep them as wild as possible for release. However, if someone has an injured animal that they have found, mm-hmm. can they bring it here?
Yep. Yeah, we always recommend that they either give us a call or call animal control and just talk through the situation first. Make sure that it's safe for them to rescue the animal themselves.
Right.
And then we would give them directions on how to put it into a box, bring it up to us, and check it in so that we can start its medical care.
And if it's too big, if you see a wounded mountain lion or coyote or something, then you can call animal control and they'll transport it? Or
I wouldn't recommend you try to catch an injured mountain lion.
Probably
yourself.
Not a good idea.
It's not a good idea.
Especially a baby one. Mama might be nearby.
Absolutely.
But that's what County Animal Services is for, right? They can transport those to you?
We rely greatly on animal control. The officers are absolutely fantastic at responding to wildlife calls and working with us to make sure that they're getting to the right rehab center, whether it's us or one of the other two.
Very good. Now, I know I found a wounded baby bird not long ago, and it was night, and I was calling all over, and nobody was open. None of the other wildlife places were open, and unfortunately, it didn't make it through the night. What can people do if they're in that situation, if they have, say, a baby bird? I know your focus is predators, but you've mm-hmm. said you do take in other native wildlife on a temporary basis, and you'll try to work with other shelters to find a more long-term rehab facility. Can people bring those kind of animals to you? And if so, during what hours?
So if it's during the day, between 8 and 5, 7 days a week, we will accept any native wild animal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be fairly true for the other organizations as well. So if it's after hours and you believe that it needs critical medical care, that's when you should definitely call animal control. They have mm-hmm. a 24/7 dispatch, and you can talk to them for your options. But otherwise, what we recommend for night rescues is that you keep the animal dark and calm in a warm, safe spot, and then bring it to us first thing in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's very, very good advice. What's new on the horizon? I understand you've got an exciting new project coming up.
Yeah, we are currently fundraising for the remodeling of our raptor aviary. That's this gorgeous 150-foot flight that we have on the property, but it's over 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So it's time that it needs some refurbishing. We work with about 200 birds a year, and we really want to make sure that we upgrade that structure this winter during the downtime,
mm-hmm.
When the birds are all away migrating, so that we are fresh up and running in the spring. So we are still looking for some sponsors for that.
Very good. Now, you showed me the housing out there where you take interns from all over the world who come here to work with these wonderful animals. Do you also
take local interns or community volunteers? How can people get involved and help?
So interns are students that are coming from all over the country, and as a few of those from worldwide. We have 7 interns completing their program right now. And we also have volunteers, like you mentioned, and they need to be at least 16 years of age, be able to drive to Ramona, because all the work is here on the property.
Right.
And we ask for a commitment of 4 hours per week for a minimum of 100 hours.
What are some of the kinds of things that the volunteers would be doing?
Oh, they get to do everything like fun laundry, dishes, picking up poop. But of course, they learn all of the medical work, the diagnostics. They get to observe the behaviors of the animals. We use a lot of night cameras because most of our patients are nocturnal. So setting up the cameras during the day, reviewing the footage on the computer to make the behavioral observations to determine if the animals are ready for release is actually a very time-consuming but fun task.
That does sound exciting. It seems like it would be good training, too, for someone who might have an interest maybe into someday going into veterinary medicine or getting a job at the zoo or something down the
Absolutely.
Road. Okay. Now, I'm sure, like all nonprofits, that you are fundraising for some of these wonderful projects. How can people find out more about the Fund for Animals Wildlife Center here in Ramona and make a donation or get more information?
So the Fund for Animals is actually a national organization, and here in California, we are the Wildlife Center version of that. If you go to fundforanimals.org and then you click on the Wildlife Center link on the left-hand side, you can find all of our information.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to meet with us here at the Fund for Animals Wildlife Center in Ramona. It sounds like there's a lot of activity going on, as we can hear in the background, and we thank you for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show.
Thanks for having me.
This is Leon Thompson with a weather warning from East County Magazine. When temperatures are sweltering, it's tempting to go to the beach and cool off with a swim in the ocean. But when thunderstorms are occurring in the region, the beach can be a dangerous place to be, as people at Venice Beach found out on Sunday. Witnesses reported seeing a bright flash and hearing a loud boom as lightning struck the water just offshore. The bolt killed a 20-year-old man in the water and sent 9 others to the hospital with injuries. The victims included people playing volleyball on the beach, as well as those in the water. One remains in critical condition, and another was revived with CPR, the Sacramento Bee reports. In addition, lightning struck a golfer at an island offshore. Hundreds of lightning strikes were reported across Southern California over the weekend, including here in San Diego's East County. So remember, when thunder roars, head indoors.
A complaint filed with the U.S. Department of Justice is alleging that authorities in San Diego's juvenile detention facilities are endangering young people in custody through practices that pose substantial risk of serious harm, City Beat has reported. This includes excessive use of pepper spray and strip searches, according to a claim filed by the Youth Law Center, California Rural Legal Assistance, and a San Diego coalition of community organizations. The complaint contends that pepper spray is routinely used on young people with sensitive medical conditions and on youths at risk of suicide, as well as on those who failed to follow directions in other situations. Less harmful methods should be tried before these extreme practices, the complaint argues. The complaint follows a City Beat investigation which revealed questionable tactics by authorities. For example, a teen girl placed on suicide watch was ordered to strip naked in front of male guards. When she refused, she was repeatedly pepper sprayed in the face until she vomited. She was then ordered to crawl out of the cell handcuffed and had her clothes forcibly removed by the guards, who then strip searched her. The groups are asking the Department of Justice to use its authority under the Civil Rights of Institutionalized Persons Act and investigate these alleged constitutional violations. Civil rights lawyer Victor Torres states, "We understand that young people who get into trouble need to be held accountable, but these extreme practices just make kids more hostile to authority and less able to accept the help that is offered." County officials also received a copy of the complaint. The county has indicated that it will review the report and welcome an opportunity to participate if an investigation is launched by the Department of Justice. Reporting for East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interests, not special interests. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week.
This is Rebecca Williamson.
And this is Leon Thompson.
This week on Destination East County, we've got music, 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 from a battle of the bands to a jazz concert and some good old 60s rock and roll. Plus, stay tuned for details on a political comedian, musical theater, and a world championship event for sports fans, all in San Diego's inland region.
A battle of the bands. The Ramona Idol Competition and a Singer-Songwriter Showcase are among the entertainment at the 44th Annual Ramona Country Fair. The fair runs from this Thursday, July 31st through Sunday, August 3rd. This event also features the Ramona Junior Fair and Livestock Auction, two stages of music and entertainment, amusement rides, crafts, vendors, and old-fashioned country fun with contests featuring jams and jellies, bread making, and more. The Ramona Country Fair is located at Agua Lane and 5th Street in Ramona. You can learn more at the Ramona Chamber of Commerce's website.
Christian Community Theater's production of the musical Les Miserables continues this weekend at the Amphitheater atop Mount Helix, where the stars shine overhead and on stage. Set amid the French Revolution, Les Mis is an epic tale of courage, sacrifice, and passion. For details and tickets, visit ChristianCommunityTheater.com.
On Friday, August 1st, Robin Henkel and Jamie Shadowlight will perform blues and jazz from 6 to 9 p.m. at Winola Pizza. The pizzeria is located on Highway 78 in Winola, on the outskirts of Julian in the mountains of East County.
This Friday night in El Cajon, Help, a Beatles tribute to the 60s, will be performed. It's all part of the city's dinner and a concert, held every Friday at Prescott Promenade Park in El Cajon from 6 to 8 p.m. For more details, visit downtownelcajon.com.
Multi-platinum-selling, Grammy-nominated singer-songwriter Jeff Tate will perform with the rock band Queensryche on Friday night, August 1st, at the Sequan Live and Up Close Theater. Known for their high-energy music, Queensryche has been nominated for a Grammy 4 times and has had their music featured in 3 feature films, selling over 25 million albums and performing in 46 countries. For tickets and more information, visit sequan.com.
The San Diego Jazz Trio will be performing in the La Mesa Downtown Village at San Pasquale Winery's Tasting Room, 8364 La Mesa Boulevard, this Saturday night, August 2nd, from 7 to 10 p.m. The trio's repertoire covers a broad spectrum of both familiar and original songs in a bright and breezy style. There is no cover charge. Wine is available by the glass, cheese, crackers, and desserts are also available. For more information, visit sanpasqualewinery.com.
Mission Trails Regional Park will present a free concert by vocalist and recording artist Lillian Palmer on Sunday, August 3rd from 3 to 4 p.m. Palmer performed in nightclubs and cabarets in Italy before returning home to Southern California. You're invited to enjoy her deep, rich voice and style at this free concert, part of a series of musical performances at the Parks Visitor Center Theater, located at 1 Father Junipero Serra Trail, just off Highway 52 in San Diego's largest urban park. For details on this concert and other upcoming performances, you can visit mtrp.org.
Now, for a preview of coming attractions, political satirist and songwriter Roy Zimmerman will perform on Wednesday, August 6th, for the La Mesa Foothills Democratic Club's 30th anniversary. His social justice songs have been heard on HBO and Showtime, and he has shared stages with George Carlin, Bill Mayer, John Oliver, and President Bill Clinton. It all takes place at the La Mesa Community Center with social time at 6:30 and the show starting at 7 p.m. For more information, you can visit LaMesaFoothillsDemocraticClub.com.
The Deerhorn Valley Community Association invites you to a barbecue fundraiser for firefighters on Sunday, August 9th from 1 to 5 p.m. The event also honors firefighters and emergency responders who gave their lives on 9/11. Spearheaded by local resident Sandra Ignoski, in memory of her late husband and brother. All proceeds benefit the Firefighter Aid, a local nonprofit that cares for local firefighters and their families in times of need. The event will be at Talamar Gardens and includes a silent auction, pulled pork, beans, slaw, beer, and wine from local vintners. Guests are encouraged to wear casual or Western attire. For tickets, call 619-468-9336.
Heads up, sports fans. The USA Volleyball Cup will be held at Viejas Arena on the campus of San Diego State University on Friday, August 16th. The U.S. will square off against Iran starting at 7 p.m. For ticket information, visit Ticketmaster.com.
The 7th annual Heart of Mount Helix will be held on Saturday, August 16th. From 5:30 p.m. until 10 p.m. up in the park atop Mount Helix. The event features visual artists at work, live music on two stages, restaurant tastings, auction, a signature cocktail, craft beer, wine, and sunset views. For information on tickets and reservations, visit mounthelixpark.org.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like to add to our calendar, or if you'd like to sponsor the Destination East County show on KNSJ, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
Welcome to East County Magazine Show's Jobs Talk, bringing you news about great jobs, job training opportunities, and growing our regional economy.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today I have two very special guests with me. The first is Herman Reddick, and Herman is the Group Program Manager with the San Diego County Fire Authority. Herman, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
Secondly, I have Chief Greg Griswold, who is the Acting Unit Chief for CAL FIRE, and he's also the Acting Fire Chief for the new San Diego County Fire Authority. Chief Griswold, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, today we're going to be talking about career opportunities in firefighting, and I understand that there are a lot of those available these days. Can you give us an idea of how many career firefighters have been hired on locally through the County Fire Authority in the last year or so?
Well, actually, in the last, since January, a lot of the volunteers, 56 volunteers, have decided to make firefighting a career for them. So that's where we're at, about 56.
Right. And we're talking about people who came in as a volunteer with a minimal stipend, got all the training that a professional firefighter gets, and then were hired on to work for the County Fire Authority or CAL FIRE, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. It starts off with the minimal training that's required by law and mandates, and then they're brought in to be a volunteer firefighter for the County Fire Authority.
Very good. And, of course, many of those volunteers went on to get jobs as full-time, well-paid firefighters working for CAL FIRE or the U.S. Forest Service or many other fire agencies around our region. So this really is a path to a future. Now, the issue of getting volunteers for the rural fire stations has actually become much more difficult than it used to be, and I understand that's because the laws at the state or federal level have changed
to make these standards much more stringent. Can you tell us, you know, in the old days, what did a person have to do to be a volunteer firefighter?
Great question, Miriam. I started off as a volunteer firefighter over 30 years ago, and the requirements then to start off was, well, one, are you breathing, and two, can you get to the fire station? And I was successful in both of those. But yeah, basically, it was on-the-job training. You got hired, you got your gear, and you started going to calls immediately. And then you just continue going to school on your own. We went to Millmar College, you got your EMT and those things, because you wanted to better yourself to hopefully have a career in the fire service.
Right.
Well, now we fast forward 30 years later into 2014, and basically, to put it in a nutshell, is the same training that a volunteer firefighter is required to have. The basic volunteer firefighter training is the same as a basic career firefighter training. So there's no difference. So you have to start off with a basic level, that, and all we're trying to do is follow the mandates that are upon us.
And they've also imposed much more stringent physical requirements. So even some of these guys who've been volunteer firefighters for 20, 30, 40 years out there are saying they've had to retire because they can't pass the physical. So in fact, there's nobody manning the store sometimes.
Yes, a lot of the physical requirements are more stringent than what they were before. And when we send folks through the Fire Academy, they go through a very demanding physical routine.
Right.
So that...
you've got to be able to carry somebody out of a burning building and all that.
Right. Carry hose, ladders... there's different things that you have to do. They have you running throughout the day to different tasks that the firefighters will have to go through. But it is more physical today than it might have been in the past.
Yeah. So is it a safe statement that the need is much greater right now for recruiting volunteer firefighters, even those who are using it as a career path to move upward, than it was in the past, when maybe there might have been a lot of folks out in the community who were perfectly happy to come in and volunteer and be a firefighter?
Yes, in the past, a lot of volunteers, they might work at the store, and then when the sound or fire bell went off, then they would just leave the store and go down and hop on the fire engine. Now, it's a 24/7 operation where they have to be physically ready to meet the demands of today's fire service.
The County Fire Authority and CAL FIRE, of course, did a wonderful job during the last fires, these wildfires that we had, of really getting everybody to safety's sake, with help with the sheriff, fighting these major fires. And even though they were burning all over, I think there were a few dozen homes that were lost, but nothing like what we saw in 2003 or 2007, where there were thousands of homes lost and, you know, hundreds of thousands evacuated. So obviously there's a lot of things that are improving under the County Fire Authority. One of the gaps, so to speak, has been that the rural fire stations, because of new laws for training and stuff, we're seeing some of the rural fire stations where there just aren't enough volunteer firefighters to man them. There have been some dark days and so forth. So what we're here to talk about today is how the county can go about filling those and what the career opportunities are for people who want to help your community by becoming a volunteer firefighter and then have an opportunity to be hired on ultimately as a career firefighter with either CAL FIRE or one of the many other firefighting agencies around. I guess some of them go on to what, U.S. Forest Service? And
that's correct.
Yeah, U.S. Forest Service. Some even get positions in other states like Texas or Pennsylvania.
Yeah, so good career opportunity. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about what it takes to become a volunteer firefighter. And first of all, when we say volunteer, you're not entirely working for free. There is a very modest stipend. How much do volunteer firefighters get paid while they're going through the training?
Well, volunteers, once they go through the process and have been deemed ready to be volunteers in the stations, they receive $95 per shift.
And how long is a shift?
A shift is 24 hours.
Okay, so $95 every 24-hour shift.
Correct. And we encourage all of them to at least do three shifts a month. Many of them do more than three shifts a month, but at least three shifts a month, we are targeting that for the volunteers.
Okay. And are there any other expenses on top of that? Do they get mileage allowances or meal allowances or anything?
Well, that's what the purpose of the stipend, to cover some of those incidental costs.
Who is eligible to apply and be brought on as a volunteer firefighter? What are the physical requirements and the background requirements that you have to meet?
Well, starting out, the minimum requirements for a volunteer in our program, you have to be 18 years of age, high school diploma or GED, valid California driver's license, and you have to have the ability to pass background and medical.
How much training do you need to go through?
Well, the training, we'll look at your applications when you first bring it forward. What we do is, on our website, we have a interest card that candidates are able to fill out. And through that interest card, we'll review all of their qualifications. If this is the first time that they've been involved with the fire service, we'll recommend some of the courses at community colleges that they should take to improve their knowledge about fire services.
Okay, and then you also have firefighting academies, don't you, that they can go through as well? And emergency medical training, I understand, that they learn?
Yes, all of our candidates should have their emergency medical technician qualification cards. Mm-hmm. And those are, you can obtain those through going through courses throughout San Diego at community colleges, as well as meeting with emergency medical services, and that's with the County of San Diego. So, they can provide more information.
So if someone comes into this who doesn't already have training in any of these areas, let's say someone straight out of high school wants to apply, for example, how many weeks does it take to reach the point where you would be getting the $100 stipend and beyond that where you would be considered to be trained as a firefighter?
Well, somebody that's coming in that has no knowledge or no experience, we will be recommending them to go to community college.
Mm-hmm.
There's several courses that,
At their own expense, or is there any funding to help them with that?
That would be at their own expense.
Okay.
So they would go through community college courses. They have fire science courses. And it usually will take about 6 months to get through those courses.
Mm-hmm. Six months, okay.
And then their EMT course, they can take that at the same time at the community colleges. They have those there mm-hmm. as well. That depends on the individual, how long that will take. Some do it very quickly, and others it might take 6 months to a year.
Okay.
So it depends on the individual.
Okay, so we're talking usually 6 months, maybe a year. Now, once you become a volunteer firefighter and you're getting this $100 stipend and you need to volunteer at least 3 shifts a month, is that something that people can work around other jobs? In other words, are you on call anytime the fire service needs you? Or can you say, I can work only certain days of the week or certain weekends or something?
Well, what happens is those that are in our system, there's schedules that are posted the prior month. They can sign up for certain days that they are available.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on who else has signed up on those days, if there's no vacancies on a particular day, then they'll have to search for another day that meets their schedule.
Okay, but there is some flexibility. In other words, you could do this as sort of a part-time.
Yes, most of our candidates have a full-time job doing something else as a prepare to become career individual.
Okay. Now, for those who don't want to be a volunteer forever, and they don't want to work for this $100 stipend for the rest of their life, a lot of folks can't afford that, but they have their eye on moving up and advancing and becoming a career-paid firefighter or perhaps an emergency medical technician. Can you tell us about what the opportunities are there and how much the salaries might be for those kinds of jobs at the entry level and what you might expect to earn over a career with that?
Well, actually, it's a very good question. Many different agencies have different opportunities as far as benefit packages or salaries, et cetera. But I'll give you some ballpark. Once successful, you become a career firefighter. There's also the career firefighter that you start off as a seasonal one firefighter. And as a firefighter one seasonal, you can work anywhere from 4 to 9 months out of the year. And that's for Cal Fire and or the U.S. Forest Service, and even Bureau of Land Management also hire seasonals.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of our own department, as far as a benefit package, a seasonal will get roughly a monthly salary, about $4,000 a month, plus they will get medical, dental, and vision, as part of their benefit package, along with start contributing towards a retirement.
So that's a pretty nice entry salary of $48,000 a year or so. And over time, if you work there a number of years, what do these salaries tend to max out on? Or if someone advances and they want to become a deputy chief or something, are there some pretty good long-term career potential for moving up the ladder, so to speak?
Oh, I think that's the goal of a lot of our firefighters that come into the system. Yeah, you start off as a seasonal, and then we have exams from that point for permanent status, a firefighter 2 or a driver, which we call a fire apparatus engineer. At that point, then you go to fire captain, and then it's endless, because a captain in our organization has 11 different functions that a captain can do, and then you get into chief, battalion chief, division chief, deputy chief, all the way up into where you could be the director of the state of California.
Oh, very good. And a number of these, I believe, are six-figure salaries. Is that correct?
I would say you have to get upwards of the assistant fire chiefs to be anywhere close to the six-figure.
Above. Okay, mm-hmm. There you go. Now, there are also opportunities in emergency medical. Tell us about those. What's involved to move up into that? How many jobs there are in that? And if you could give us an idea of what someone might expect to earn.
Well, as far as what they might expect to earn, I don't have that information. But mm-hmm. As far as those that are EMT qualified, there's plenty of ambulance companies and hospitals that are looking for EMTs. And there's also the opportunity to move up and be paramedics.
Very good.
And paramedics and most of the fire service agencies, the cities, they have paramedic engines. So there's that opportunity for them to be on career stations that are paramedic.
That's a good point, Herman, because the fire service today is really in the municipality type of mm-hmm. the fire service is paramedic. We are moving towards that in our own department, and all the departments throughout the state are moving to paramedic. So that is very important mm-hmm. to consider.
Other than just the salary and the benefits, what are some of the advantages of being a firefighter? Chief Griswold, you've been doing this a lot of years, I imagine. What are some of the things that you like best about this as a career?
You know, I'm going on about 30 years in the fire service. I have to say I've enjoyed almost every minute of it. But quite frankly, we spend so much time with the people at work that they become your second family. If you looked at from the time you started to the time you retire, you're probably spending almost half that time with your second family, which is the fire service family. And to me, the friendships, the camaraderie, the trust that's built is second to none. That's what I find most enjoyable.
Yeah, and I would imagine it's certainly a very noble profession in that you're serving your community, you're giving back, and in some cases saving lives. So that has to be a satisfying feeling when you go home at night.
It's very satisfying, but like any work, it is work. And when we have those destructive fires, I can tell you firsthand that it's not always fun to watch that or to be part of that. It's quite frankly, there's a little party that leaves every time when it comes to those devastating fires. So that's the hard part of it.
Yeah. There certainly is a risk involved, of course, as well. But that said, what is the safety record for Cal Fire?
Well, the safety record, I don't have those figures in front of me, but I know that we have a very vigorous safety program. And any time there's a, what we call a near miss or an incident mm-hmm. where it occurs to safety, we have what we call a SART team, which is a serious accident review team that comes in and looks at everything to make sure that we can learn something from that particular incident.
Right. Statistically, I've read, though, that firefighting actually is much safer than, although there's clearly a risk, than, say, being a police officer, for example.
Yeah, I know that we've done several strides in recent years with different capabilities of our breathing apparatus, our self-contained breathing apparatus, mm-hmm. to keep those toxins out of our body. So I know that the fire service has done a great deal with that. We've improved our PPE, which is our personal protective equipment,
right.
and making things a little more maneuverable with us and cooler. So, yeah. Yes, we have made some strides.
So, again, we're talking with Chief Greg Griswold, who is the acting fire chief for San Diego County Fire Authority, as well as Cal Fire locally, and with Herman Reddick, who's the group program manager with the San Diego County Fire Authority, for those of you that are tuning in late. And we are talking about opportunities to become a volunteer firefighter, which starts at a stipend of $100 a day after about 6 months of training, and then the opportunities from there to move up into career firefighting opportunities.
So once again, for those who tuned in late, can you give us an idea of about how many of your trainees who started as volunteers got jobs as firefighters within the last year or so since we've been working at this with the County Fire Authority?
Well, over the last few months, I would say about 56 received career jobs with CAL FIRE, U.S. Forest Service, or other agencies across the country.
There you go. And how many went through the volunteer program in the last in that same period of time?
Through the volunteer program, we had about 55 that were brought into our program.
So that's pretty high. In other words, you're graduating up about as many of them moving on to career firefighting positions as are coming in the doors as trainees for the volunteer program. That sounds like pretty good odds if you're a job hunter out there.
Yes, this is a great career opportunity for young, motivated individuals to move forward and obtain a career in the fire service.
Very good. If listeners out there want to get more information about becoming a volunteer firefighter and getting that training toward either being a long-term volunteer serving the community or moving up into a career path, who should they contact and where can they get more information?
For more information, it is on our website, and the website address is www.sdcounty.ca.gov/SDCFA.
Okay, and we will be posting that on our website as well, so listeners, if you miss that, you can go to eastcountymagazine.org and we'll have a story up all about this. Is there anything else that either of you would like to add that you think listeners or prospective firefighters should know?
Well, actually, I do have one thing, and thank you for the opportunity. You know, with this recent event to the conflagration that we just recently occurred here in San Diego County, we, for the first time that I can recall, the fire service thanking the community for one. Most everyone had really good defensible space around their homes. And two, they adhered to the evacuation orders. So that's what I like to do is just take this opportunity. One, remind everybody that we still need to look at our defensible space. It is May. We're heading into a long season that, quite frankly, there's a lot of us that are a bit nervous. So
yeah.
Please, you know, do what you can to make yourself successful as it pertains to defensible space.
Very important to help the firefighters to help save your home before the next wildfire strikes.
Yes.
And also, volunteering is a noble service, and those that are interested in the fire service, please volunteer and be part of our program.
Well, very good. You can help keep your community safe. I want to thank both of you very, very much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show.
We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Brian Boykel, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.